Hi everyone, and welcome to another edition of In the Metal. In the Metal, by now you may be familiar with, is a look behind the scenes of the world of independent watchmaking, where we try to figure out what the techniques that are being used by different watchmakers who do their own thing. That's one of the beauties of independent watchmaking. Everyone has their own language, their own style, and essentially it's an extension of their personality. And so we, every week, we have been had the great fortune to speak to some of the most amazing independent watchmakers in the world at the minute. And where some of those have been legends who have been established for 20, 30 years, there's also, thankfully, a new upcoming generation of really cool independent watchmakers. And they're highly technical. Their watches are not the kind that you would ever get signed off in a big corporate boardroom. So they're funky, they're cool. And we've got one of those guys with us tonight. So we will be talking to Stefan Kittelaars, a young Dutch guy, in the next few minutes. And to help me grill him will be my partner in time in North Carolina, U.S. master watchmaker. He's got big guns, hasn't he, man? It's Carolina. Yeah. You're a Rodian man. Is that how you had your...
I'm ready for the Dutch. I'm ready for the kick some Dutch ass.
Yeah, this guy is something else, man. So, hey, Dan, what's how are you doing?
Johnny, how's the Irish thing going over there?
Everything is going good. The sun is shining. It's a beautiful evening. And that's Ireland. No,
I think the only time your country will ever like explode is if the coronavirus gets so far out of hand they close down all the beer distilleries.
That would be the worst thing in the world, man. And let me tell you, there were you talking about you guys can protest. You want to happen? Yeah. We had no beer, there would be hell.
Yeah, there'd be no government left in 24 hours.
Yeah, we don't fucking government anyway, man. Hey, we've got on tonight. We've got.
I'm real excited about Stefan. I've been following him. I just told him before. I've been following him for a while. This is a really, really very interesting story. It just goes to show once again the perseverance. I'll let him tell the story of what it's like to do what he's done the way he's done it, and it shows that anyone can somehow if they have the skills, the know-how, the perseverance, and even if they're young, they can tackle it and become some form of an independent watchmaker and be part of the scene and get on their way, you know, like any other business. Get on your way. I always say, don't wait till it's over. Don't wait till everything's perfect. You know, just get going.
Totally.
You know?
And look, what this guy is doing is his watches are just, you see, like, we work on in the watch industry. We see watches all the time. Most of them are cool. Most of them we love. But occasionally something stands out. And what this guy here is doing, it stands out. And for more reasons than one, it is not only is it extraordinary aesthetically and technically, but this man is pitched to sell. He's got one of the best price points in the indie sector that I have seen in a long, long time.
We're going to talk about how he's pulling that off too. Yeah, because that's not easy.
I think sometimes young guys sort of don't put that kind of value on their work, and but it grows.
John, maybe after this show he'll multiply his prices by 10. So if you want to order something before we bring him on right now, place your order.
I am just going to do that right now. So we're going to go over to Amsterdam and to where Stefan is hopefully sitting waiting on us to tell us what is happening with you. Good evening.
Good afternoon. What's up,
Stefan? The
price just went up 30%.
Welcome to In the Metal, Stefan. It is a great pleasure to welcome one of the new generation of indie watchmakers who are really making a massive impression on the industry with your style, with your just I love the design of your watch. And we're going to get a look at a few of those in a little while. But so welcome to In the Metal, and it's good to have you on board.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah. So, Stefan, like I told you a little while ago, and I told everybody here, I've been following your incredible work for a while now on Instagram. You know, Instagram seems to be the place for all of us. We've all kind of fell in there. I know some people are still on the Facebook and that kind of stuff, but it seems this is where we can best show our works. And it's going to be a little bit part of this discussion of, because it's, you know, it's we run a business, you know, besides besides the craftsmanship, right, that we have to make and the intricate parts that have to be micron precision and all that, we have to run a business. We're independent, and the less people we have to hire, meaning for me would be none, and I think for Stefan is none, would be better. So we have to utilize social media, and that's what it's there for. I didn't have that when I was growing up, when I ran a band and that business, but now you have a free magazine, and Instagram seems to be the fastest way we can get things up.
Social media. Let's say you want to start a watchmaking business 20, 30 years ago, then it's nearly impossible to gain like a really enormous public. And yeah, nowadays it's just using Facebook, using Instagram using 10, 15 tags. And yeah, you can tackle the complete world.
Yeah. No, so, I know. Way back when I was in the early days of watchmaking school, and then thereafter, after many, many, many years of apprenticeship and heading to Switzerland to WoStep and all that, it was impossible. Like you just said, it was a different time, different era. We could look at a little horological magazine and see like a little ad that someone might have spent $5,000 on.
Yeah, really expensive.
Like you see like Paul Gerber, a triple rotor. You see just like a little picture, or not even, he couldn't afford that. Just, you know, an interview they did with him. That's it. You know, that's all you got. So now, what I want you to explain to young watchmakers is a little bit about yourself, because your background is quite different than the traditional way, because you got your business going. So this show, I want to show other people that if you have the skills, you know, you could get your feet on the ground and get running. And you never know where that's going to take you, especially if you're young. Yeah. So explain to them how you got started. You know, you're, again, like me, you're in a different part of the world where watch parts and machinery and everything is quite difficult to get. So if you could explain how you got the bug.
I think it nearly started 10 years ago. I bought like a skeleton watch, and I was really impressed with the mechanics of this watch. And it started to fire. So I bought like my first ETA movement. I skeletonized this movement. And from there on, I just kept continuing, make it more difficult. First skeletonizing, then complications, then skeletonizing in combination with complications. And at the moment I'm very
What books did you read after you get into something, it could be anything. Let's just say whatever it may be. Usually someone either is on Google nowadays, you know, or YouTube.
That's the perfect platform.
Because you can't just get a watch and start taking it apart. Obviously, you'll destroy the hairspring and whatnot. But how did you, you know, get going so fast on your own?
Yeah, it's YouTube. You have so many videos where they explain how to open a watch movement, what every part, its function is, how to apply different finishing. So, I'm lucky with the internet nowadays. It's you got all the information on the internet. And if you search for so many hours, you can learn everything.
Was that your education then? Did you attend watchmaking school or
no? I've studied 8 years.
This is such a unique story, Johnny. Is what I'm trying to.
That's
why Stefan's story is very much different to most. Let's say we'll get in later on to others that have. That have gone down his path and deep into his path. I love stories like this. Perseverance above and different from the norm, mm-hmm. let's say, my route, which is a little different. So it shows that you can get there. And that information nowadays, especially for him, he's adept at going on YouTube for 10 hours a day, whatever it takes to get that information. But what I find difficult, Stefan, what I'd like you to explain to people is the bad information. There's tons of it there to show you how to decorate movements the wrong way. I mean, I've seen it. Okay. So how do you know if you don't have the experience, what you were watching was the way? Did you acquire the machine and then just test the ways and find your own ways? Fill us in.
Yeah, it's that's difficult. But especially with movement finishing, there is not that much information you can find on the internet. Not sure if you found the same, but you know, they show you the movement finishing, but how to apply the actual finishing, that's more like a gray area. Mm-hmm. So actually, most of the different finishing types are, yeah, just sort of trial and error.
Yeah, no, I agree. If you go on YouTube and search Côte de Genève or Geneva Stripes, you'll find, maybe if you really hunt, you'll find Hajime Osaka in Japan. But he does it in a very untraditional way. He doesn't do it with wood and paste the way someone like me is classically traditionally trained to do. Mm-hmm. You know, he found his own way because, mm-hmm. like you, it's a very parallel story here. Like you, he didn't go to school either, and he learned from the George Daniels books and other books.
Yeah. The Watchmaking Bible. I also have here in my.
Yeah, we all have that book, right?
Yeah, it's very important.
I find it important, but what I keep saying it when we interview someone is, it's like, I don't know what it says in that book. It's like you have to have 57 different jobs, learn 10,000 hours in to make your own watch back then when he wrote the book. But I say now, someone has to certainly update that book, because to be an independent, most of the time, we now have to learn CAD. We have to learn CAM. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have to somehow, someone like me, you know, you might want to learn how to build your own CNC machine to get the accuracy that we need in watchmaking, because they're very large, they're very expensive. And the part nobody tells you, and I'll tell you all if you're interested, is if you get one of those beautiful, nice, you know, almost, you know, maybe $1 million CNC machine, wait till you get your first a month's electricity bill. Because it's going to blow your mind. It's crazy insane, the electricity they suck. So it's better to keep them small, nice tabletop model that you can make our parts in. Unfortunately, nobody actually manufactures one. There's an old Kern, but good luck trying to find one. So we need those extra jobs. Now they should be added to that book for modern day independent watchmaking.
I also built my own gear cutter. My own automated gear cutter.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Absolutely amazing. Absolutely. The ingenuity that we have to have is what we need. Yeah, there you go.
I love this. We're getting
there. Yeah. That was just recently. You just finished that, right?
Yeah, I
saw that. That's really killer.
David, it's really cool that you're building your own CNC machine.
Yeah. That took a year of my life, and then maybe another 6 months or so to perfect it and get it going, and you know, mess around with different things to get it where it needs to be. It's just all for my head, and again, you know, searching on YouTube to find the right parts that would give me what I needed in the end.
If you can send me the blueprints after the show, then
So yeah, what's really cool is, see, we need Stefan, and we're gonna find this in all independent watchmakers. In order to get a job done, like he needs to make gears, there's no such thing as we just go buy a gear cutter. That's not the way this works. It's all secret. Like even the gear cutters themselves, where to get them, what they're made out of. You know, it's just till recently that we actually know where those places are. There's very few people that actually manufacture the actual cutters, and it's very difficult. Every step we have, especially someone like Stefan is not in Switzerland. He's like me. I'm in the United States. Nobody wants to tell us all these secrets. First of all, they speak French, and if they speak English, it's not much English. And if they do, they still don't want to tell us, because that means we're taking away their job, possibly some income from them. It is a business behind the scenes. So it's a very difficult process to get these little secrets out there. So any little things that are on YouTube are actually very helpful, as Stefan said. So congratulations on the gear making machine. That's killer.
I think until now it's the smallest automated gear cutter that's ever been made in the world.
Wow, that's unbelievable.
So I just type in the diameter of the wheel that needs to be cut. I type in the material, the amount of teeth, and the rest is done all automatically.
But fill people in, because if I'm correct, you have a background in beyond just like normal tinkering in electronics, correct?
Yes. So yeah, I've studied 8 years of electronical engineering. So I can write software, I can build PCBs, I can control stepper motors, I can do those things.
I could have used you a year and a half ago. Same thing. I mean, I have to build my own, you know, for CNC, you have to build your own computers. Mm-hmm. You got to find your own control boards. You have to find what servos work. You have to get everything talking to each other. It's all in DOS and, you know, and so on and so forth. So, yeah, I mean, I got some missing brain cells that I could have used you and saved those brain cells. But
brain cells you lost over the years with.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that too. But that was that was another life.
Well done. Nice one, Stefan. But Stefan, do you find that one of the things that I think, because so many young watchmakers are coming from different backgrounds. So I was reading today about a young guy from Ingushetia, you may or may not have heard of yet, Sorev Rashid. And again, he had no formal education either. So he was landlocked, away from any sort of influences. But my point to you being, with your electronic engineering experience, I find a lot of indies bring into the industry something that they've brought from their past. Do you find that your experience has actually contributed to the way you look at watchmaking or the way that you do your work?
Yeah, I work really efficient. I think that's what I've learned from my background. So I've tried to master everything and then try to improve it. And also try to, you know, increase the time a little bit and decrease the time. And I think especially it's working efficient. And that's also why the price is lower compared to the other independent watchmakers.
Wow. That's something I was going to come to in a little while about, because you definitely, your watches are amazing. To me, they're amazing value.
Hey, Johnny, you got a picture? Throw something up.
Oh, I think we could do that. Okay, then. So, what would you like? How about the Mars? How about this one? So that is the Terra 3D, but it's the Mars version, is it? Yeah. Stefan.
So this watch, I can tell you like all the personalization factors on this this piece. So this watch has also a rotating 3D mask that is hand-painted. The dial itself is hammered and etched. The circle around the dial is hand-engraved and also etched. The hands are made out of titanium and heat-treated. And also part of the balance wheel is skeletonized in order to show the motion of the balance wheel. And like all the parts you can see from here are all made in-house.
So Stefan, are you doing solely all the work yourself?
Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible. So when did you learn, and how did you learn how to do hand engraving?
Oh, no, with the hand engraving, the engraving on the dial, so like the numbers and those things, I engrave, but that's I will use a CNC machine for this. But the Ketelaars, it's hand engraved by another Dutch person. So in the Netherlands, we have like very tight community with like other few watchmakers. And we have one person that has specialized just only in engraving. And all the engraving on my watches, so it's a name, and my logo on the buckle, it's done by him.
So do you have a little CNC machine that's doing the engraving there, or do you have, again, a friend, a Dutch friend that is doing the engraving for you?
No, I've got a small CNC machine. So okay. I bought a CNC machine, and I modified the CNC machine. And at the moment, I'm also, I'm working towards building my own CNC machine. So I'm still searching for the most accurate component. And I'll start building this machine within 2 months.
Okay. Well, if I can help in that area, we can DM each other and talk a little bit.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, we'll be helping.
I went through that struggle, and there's no one really to learn from except the like Hajime, or he's one of the first, and Mark Jenny, who we had on here, is the first, as far as I know, who's he set the trend, it's a lengthy process, but with your brain, you can escalate, and the knowledge that some of us have now.
I've already started drawing inside my head, so I'm close toward an end result.
It's not about drawing. It's about what do you want to do with it? If you do want to make nameplates, then it's a whole different ballgame as far as the accuracy goes. And the research is crazy. You don't want to build it and then get there and go, I can do one. The problem is, what happens when we want to do number 2, 3, and 4? Will they come out, with the accuracy that you need? Repeatability.
I'm going to add a few extra components on the CNC machine in order to monitor the temperature. And in order to increase or decrease the temperature, in order to make sure that the complete machine has a constant temperature during the milling, with linear axis, you can get an accuracy of 0.01 millimeter.
0.01. Yeah, that's what Kern does. All I can say is, as you can see, Stefan's not normal, right?
No, these guys.
None of us are normal. So his normal is skewed a little bit from my abnormal. Well, I call it normal, but it's abnormal to you guys. We're all a little bit off. And it takes a little bit of offness to be an artist. It takes a lot of bit of offness to be a true artist. And you need to be out of your freaking mind to be out of your freaking mind. And that's the stuff that legends are made out of, is the guy who's out of his freaking mind, right? And we have some of those people on this show, right, Johnny?
So absolutely.
Stefan's on his way to be out of his mind, and then out of his mind again.
It's really important to follow your passion. So too many people are just making logical choices. It's logical to find a well-paid job, and it's logical that you will work from 8 to 5 hours. 8 o'clock in the morning until 5 hours. But for me, it's just I'm following a dream, and I'm doing whatever it takes in order to succeed with the dream.
And right there, that's what we have to convey to anyone who's trying or even thinking. If you're a collector and you're saying, I'm too old, or I'm too young, or I'm too this, or I'm too that, I got my 9 to 5. Stefan's a great example of anything's possible. You can do it. You don't have to start out being an independent and say, I need to make $35,000 watches to eat and do this. And you got to start somewhere. So you start with your art and make sure your art is a good representation of who you are. And obviously Stefan's, it's him, the globe, how he figured out, how to make the globe. And he was smart. Okay, right, Stefan, we'll talk about this. He didn't do something stupid like me, like try to make a ground-up movement of every part is manufactured and designed by me, and it's like nothing else on planet Earth, which takes a very long time. And you need an extreme background in traditional watchmaking. He took a base 6497/6498 Eaton movement, which is basically like buying, and if you're into cars, it's an old Chevy, it's an old Chevy block, that's going to stand the test of time and last forever. And you get the block there. And now what are you going to do with that? You build on it. So he built what we call a module or a semi-module. And that's his art that sits on top of a watch that keeps great time. You can do anything you want. That's your art. And what a great platform to start. That's how we started watch school. We make bridges on top of a main plate, which is the hardest thing to make in watchmaking consistently. And you just make the bridges. You can modify wheels. You can skeletonize wheels, skeletonize the bridges. And you learn how to line everything up and change the watch to make it your own art. And from there, you don't know where you're going to end up. And what he's created is way out of the box. So that's why everyone is looking at Stefan. He produces this for now, for today, at the price he does. Like you said, it has to be something where he wakes up and doesn't sleep much. So he wakes up from his 1.5 hours of nightly sleep.
Arnold Schwarzenegger says, instead of sleeping 8 hours, you should sleep faster.
It's true.
But it was never my intention to start an actual business. So it was always like, just a hobby. I was started my regular work. Mm-hmm. And it rolled in a company.
It just took off, right?
Yeah. Yep. So I did the 8 years electronical engineering. I started working at ASML. I'm not sure if you ever heard of this. It's like one of the Dutch biggest companies. They produce these very big machines that manufacture these electronical chips. And for me, it was just a desk job. So I was at the engineering side, the electronical development, and it was all writing documents or it was sitting in meetings. And my way out was watchmaking during the evening. That was finally the time that I could do something with my hands. And instead of writing documents and just countless hours of sitting in meetings. And it just, I kept going, kept spending weekends making, manufacturing these movements. Mm-hmm. And eventually it rolled into a business. So I was just really lucky.
Okay. Yeah, it's lovely when you fall into something together. But as you say, that is the beauty of, living the dream, because you're doing something that other people can't really envisage. They can't imagine themselves doing. And sometimes you have to think outside the box just to follow that dream, even if it doesn't make sense at the time, even if people are saying, why are you doing this? Mm-hmm. Again, that young guy I was talking about a few minutes ago in Ingushetia, which is it's between the Caspian and the Black Sea. It's far away from anywhere where there's watchmaking going on. And he is 22 years of age, 23 years of age. Well, I know that he just sold out his first year's production of his first editions. Right. It's only 12, 13 watches in total. But I bet you, when I was thinking of him today, I was thinking, I bet you behind that guy is a dad who's going, well, no, there you. I didn't expect that. I fucking told you so. You've got that belief. So,
what I'm trying to say is, this is not something like another art form where you can really just dive in and go, I'm going to be a watchmaker and that's my new title and I'm going to make watches. There's things inside a mechanical watch like hairsprings. It's just you got to go to school. So for someone like me, I started before watchmaker school. I started when I was 8 years old. But still, to be able to do what Stefan's done and accomplish that in a short period of time, without traditional training or at least a basic school of 3 years, it baffles the mind of us people who are watchmakers. To train watchmakers in school, where we spend 6 months to a year sitting at our bench just messing with a hairspring. That's it. We're not allowed to work on the rest of the watch because the heart of the watch is the hairspring. So we look at that like if anyone opens up a watch and doesn't know, hasn't had that training in hairsprings and they just touch that hairspring, just one touch, the watch never runs right again. They don't know what to do. They haven't been trained on hairsprings. That really is the bottom line. I mean, you can't learn that on YouTube, okay? You do need an instructor who can show you what's right, what's wrong. You could learn about hairsprings and so on and so forth. So for someone like Stefan or someone like Hajime Osaka. Why do you think he wins all those awards? Because we're all baffled. He's got to be lying to us, right? Like, how does he build a watch from scratch that fast and has no traditional training? It's but some people, they break through and they find their own way to get that art. The art is in them, and they got to get it out, and they just figure out a way. And Stefan's done that, and he's created a look to his timepieces that is, you know, very, very unique. And he made the mechanics work. You know, obviously, now we know he has an extremely mechanical brain. So, you know, he's probably been building stuff, you know, in his garage or something, you know, his whole life. When you were young, were you always building stuff, be it electronics or be it mechanical?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Instead of playing with Lego, I was, working in the garage, sawing and filing and sanding. And
There you go.
I've been building since I can walk. So it's...
There you go. Brilliant. So see, there's always, this is what the stories that we like to get out of here, Johnny, that it's not just, oh, I picked up a book and now you can buy my watch. You know, it's in them, you know, it has to be in you. You know, my bedroom growing up looked like, you know, like NASA, you know, everyone's the whole neighborhood, their home stereos, their car stereos, their guitar tube amps. Everything is in my room. I mean, because I just fix stuff. I like that. Mm-hmm. I like to take broken crap and I make something out of it. So it was innately in me. So I can problem solve. I'm a problem solver. So that's how I, in watchmaking, went from one place to another, to being in those positions of not just working on complications, but being hired to test for longevity for some of the Swiss brands. Will it break later? When will it break? What part will break? Because I've seen so much broken crap in my life. I know what'll last, I guess. But Stefan, you know, tell us more about your timepieces, you know, and where you're headed, you know, because sometimes people get to your point, and it's very interesting, because I'm trying to show people, you can dive in, you can get this done, you can start. But sometimes people get in so deep like you, and then they just say, okay, I got to stop. I want to go to school. I want to go to school to learn something I can't learn on YouTube. There's people out there that have done that as well. They get to a certain point and then they hunger for more knowledge. And they really, the only way to get knowledge would be, you know, go to WOSTEP or go to KWHCC, now the amazing school, something like that. Do you see something like that in your future, or are you just going to keep pummeling down the road?
Yeah, I've got a lot of connections in the watchmaking world. So I think when I turn out at the point that I can't make something or don't understand it, I can always pull some strings and learn from those guys. But yeah, I have to say, I'm not seeing myself going to school for watchmaking. Because building movements, that's not something you'll learn at the watchmaking school. Building complications, or I think the watchmaking school is like more like really traditional, but yeah, the complications and movement building, I'm not sure if you can learn this with watchmaking education.
I think we've been asked, people are asking to have a look at some of your pieces, and I think in a way, if I show something like the Terra 3D, that people can understand maybe why you don't feel that you need that, to go into watchmaking school. What are you going to learn that's going to really change what you're doing there? Like, you know, and because that is, it's probably not the best angle to get a look at it, but it is a beautiful three-dimensional display of time, that beautiful bridge, the balance bridge, and the off-center hours, minutes, and that revolving Earth, similar to the Mars that we looked at a moment or two ago. But like that kind of says, you know, I don't really need to learn much more about this because I'm getting pretty good at this anyway, you know?
But you are always learning. I'm learning every day, and I will be learning until I ever stop watchmaking because something happens with my hands. But yeah, it's an endless cycle of learning, watchmaking.
Yeah, I've got to go back to one of your early.
I think that's the most interesting thing of watchmaking, that you're never done with learning.
It's like golf. You're good for an hour and then you suck. And you can never learn enough. Stefan, how did you learn about gear cutting?
There is one other Dutch watch brand, and he did cut my gears for the first 10 watches, and I saw his setup. It was like an enormous machine with a small gear cutter, and it was partly automated. And I told him, one day I will make this machine only one tenth of the size that your machine is. And he was like, yeah, I have to see this. And then I built this machine. So the first few gears were cut by a different watchmaker. And the rest of all my gears are cut by myself.
But how did you learn about modules and what size gear cutter, where to get gear cutters?
The finding the gear cutters was really difficult. Because until now I only found one website where they sell these gear cutters. And I think it took me 3 weeks to 1 month before I found the right website for this. And learning modules, they're just searching on the internet. It's just like a few basic calculations, and that wasn't too difficult. But finding the place where you can buy those cutters, that was like really difficult.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And finding a place where you can buy glasses, where you can manufacture watch cases, finding a good person who can make watch straps, like finding decent mills for your milling machine and everything. Mm-hmm. It's
a struggle.
Searching.
You can find it.
Until it works.
And it's very costly.
It's an expensive hobby.
And every time we mess with a different material, which is what I'm doing here on my timepieces here, we have to try different brands, different mills, and it's very, very costly. This is part that the business that most people don't know. They just see the end pretty product, or they might see pictures that we post. Oh, look, I made this part, but they don't realize, it's $6,000 later of broken end mills or broken, it broke the machine twice or whatever it may be. And they wonder why it takes so long in manufacturing. We still do trial and error, even at the top level.
Yeah.
We're always trying to break through to the next innovation or the next complication or the next material or something really cool. And it's not to sell it. It's because we love what we do. We're just trying to reinvent, just like in music in my past, writing a song the standard progressive way, where there's intro, verse, chorus, and everything is structured. We know that formula works for the human brain, and how many clicks per minute on beat, makes your body do a certain movement. For dance music, it's a certain doof, 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 doof. That stupid thing you hear all the time, four on the floor.
Yeah.
But for rock and roll, it's something else. The music I helped to create, it was something that no one had ever heard before. There was no beat. Like, where is the beat? It's not there. So you go outside the box to reinvent for yourself. It's really not for anybody else. It just so happens along the way, you catch a lot of fans. So in music, they're called fans. They're really not fans. They're kind of part of the band. They're sensing what's inside you as an artist. And they're finding a companionship with who you are in what they are. And it's the same thing in watchmaking. Stefan released his timepiece. People looked at it and said, how much? Is it 65 grand? About 50 grand? 40 grand? It's got to be. And when he tells them the price, even for me, I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, how is this possible? Like, is it being made in China? Was it made out of plastic? And then it's like, it's stainless steel coated like the cheap refrigerators we get now. It's not stainless steel. That's not real stainless steel. Doesn't everyone know that already? It's this thin little coating of Chinese crap, but that's not what it is. Stefan's hand making his stuff, and he's with his ingenuity and his intellect, he's figured out a way to break through every single barrier of the traditional way of watchmaking. And it just goes to show you, not anyone can do it. You got to be quite intelligent and have perseverance and be able to get out of bed each morning, a little bit early. But you can break through and give your art to the world. I find that fascinating. Yeah. Totally fascinating.
We have questions in here from some of our people who are watching us tonight. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in and getting with us here on In the Metal. And so we'll cover some of these questions in a little while, because the placement for them would maybe suit a little later in the show. But Lulu, who's been a great supporter of In the Metal in Indonesia and has been sharing us, she's wanting to know, what is the price range of your watches? This is going to surprise a few people, isn't it, Stefan?
The price range of my watches?
Yeah.
It depends if it's like an the pocket watch movement I use, the ETA, or like my in-house movement. And the price can vary from 3.8K without tax in euro up to 15K.
That's
so.
Sorry? Amazing. Yeah, it's fantastic. I actually hadn't been aware that you were pitching your new in-house movement. Is this the in-house movement here then?
No. This is still an ETA with modified bridges.
Okay.
This one is an ETA 6497, and I reground the base plate. I modified the movement bridges. I frosted finish the top side of movement bridges. I added anglage, black polished the screws, added the number plate, nameplate, swan neck. Also, the center wheel, I refinished this one. It's still a bot in movement, but I just completely adjust this movement. And the top of this movement is Sunburst ground, actually.
And what machines do you have in your workshop that are enabling you to do all this? Can you tell us a few?
A lot. I've got one watchmaker LED, for adjusting movement bridges, like Sunburst ground movement bridges or circular ground. Mm-hmm. I can sandblast in my shop. I've got my CNC machine. I've got my gear cutter. And I've got a ton of handmade watch tools, watch parts. A lot of microscopes, I think around 4 or 5, to watchmaking bench. It's just... Yeah, so, I've got a lot of equipment.
Yeah, no, I've seen most of it on your Instagram. I just want the people to know that, it's not, it's an elaborate, incredible, workshop. And it's not big, giant, huge Hauser jig borers and massive CNC machines. And, you can get this done on a relatively decent budget and ingenuity. Obviously, Stefan's been building stuff his whole life, so he's probably found some of the vintage watchmaking lathes like I have, and you got to get them, and you got to restore them, you got to keep finding parts. And let's remember again, he's not in Switzerland, okay? So for you people out there that don't understand, trying to find these machines and then the parts that they're missing later on that are 100 years old or 150 years old and then restore them is extremely hard. So finding parts is impossible. Finding jewels, rubies, mainsprings, hairsprings, whatever you need, it's impossible. ETA does not sell movements to someone like Stefan. Okay, so you got to find the movements and the machines. We don't, we have to set up, and he has to do it in another country. And so he has to have a friend in Switzerland somewhere, somehow, some way to get what he needs. So these are all stumbling blocks for people like me. I'm in the United States, which is an impossibility. I haven't even touched upon the metal he needs, the specialized brass, specialized steel, whatever he's using inside his movement. It's just a complete nightmare. It's not like you opening up a car repair business and you just call up because a Mercedes in and I need a Mercedes radiator, I need a Mercedes alternator, and it just gets sent. That's not the way this works, okay? Everything is against us, right?
It took me months before I found the right steel, the right brass.
There you go.
Everything, it's like, it's not really well described on the internet. It's hours and hours of searching and testing and trying and, even finding the right brass. That's a challenge on its own.
And then even when you find it, Stefan, so what I'm trying to do here is not just, it's between me and you, but I'm trying to show other people that even when we search, we could be searching for weeks, right? And we find the right brass, let's say, we'll just use brass as an example.
Yeah.
Then we say, oh, I finally found the brass I need. And then we make a call and they say, I'm sorry, we can't sell you 2 sheets of that. We can sell you 200 sheets and that'll be $13,000. And that's the way this goes. And these are the struggles that independence has, because we're not really manufacturers. We're artists. We're creating the top level of micromechanical art. We can't do that making 500 watches. The bottom line is it's this cookie cutter crap.
Everything takes an insane amount of time. Like every step, it can take weeks up to months. So it's
it's a lot of pain. So wow, is all I can say. He's accomplished so much so fast. Stefan, tell everyone, if you don't mind, can you tell everyone your age?
I'm 27.
Okay.
I've been a full-time watchmaker now for 2 years. And before this, I did it part-time, like 10, 20 hours a week for 2 years. So I'm like 4 years in the watchmaking business and 2 years full-time.
So
that's so mad.
It's crazy. But I remember when I was in my 20s, look, I woke up in the morning and said, I'm going to take over the world. I not only took over this world, I have, a song playing on planet Mars. So I took over the world. When you're young, anything's possible. But I want to touch upon something we haven't touched yet upon. Somebody actually wrote in here, Johnny, so maybe we will touch upon one of the questions here.
Yeah, we do have comments to get back to you.
This is Captain Forrest, 34. Captain Forrest asked a question that I should be asking everyone, being that it's right in the forefront of what we do now, Stefan. Because part of what we do is making, we have to have a case for our watch, which is basically like a miniaturized submarine. Okay, it's a sealed submarine. And that's an art in itself. That's what I'd like to let the collectors know. For me, I'm a micro mechanic. I like the inside of a watch. I'm the designer of every part of my watch. I did everything from soup to nuts. I'm not really into case making. It's like not my gig. I'm case finishing is all right. I just don't like my hands completely filthy with all that crap that, that everyone gets on, even wearing gloves. It's just not my thing. We each have a thing. So, there's someone who's making cases, and he's broken that barrier in 3D printing. And he's making it out of the gold and platinum. It's never been done before. And I'm sure I'll let you mention who this gentleman is. I'm sure you know who he is. I was wondering if you, with your background, were interested in kind of moving in that direction someday into the future.
No. It's not a Dutch watchmaker that 3D prints those cases. What I try to do is keep the design of my cases as simple as possible. There's already a lot happening on the dial side, so I will keep the case more like traditional.
Mm-hmm. It's not your you don't need to specialize in elaborate case making.
Exactly what I was trying to say about myself. But we're all a little different in what we do. That's what's so wonderful about watchmaking, that it's each individual independence art. And you know who I'm talking about too, right, Johnny? How do you pronounce it?
Yeah, Holtenrich watches.
Michael Holtenrich.
I found that's his whole story and his struggle. I'd like to get him on here because that's a fascinating story. Even Stefan, for someone even like me and you who are interested in machinery and building our own machinery from scratch and all that, I find that really fascinating. I know he's not making it himself, and he's outsourced it. Perhaps someday he will. But he broke through on that. It's a lot of work. I wouldn't have time to do the finishing because they come so raw. My time is spent from ground up on my movement. But I just find that fascinating, and what the future will hold for 3D printing, and perhaps sometime in the future for parts that are inside the watch as well. What we could do with that?
That's really difficult.
Yeah.
Like you're printing a metal on top of each other, and you get like a lot of tension inside the material. So it's really difficult to 3D print delicate parts because of this tension, all these components will, how do you say it? It will change its shape because of the tension inside the metal.
It might not have the strength that we need for certain parts, but possibly for people who do cosmetic parts or this or that. We don't know what the future will bring, or what they do. I just find it a very interesting technology moving into the future. Look, people said you wouldn't be able to have our own little CNC machine that's, you know, the accuracy of what I have sitting right in front of me here. They told me, you know, same thing, impossible, can't do it. You know, 25 years ago, Stefan, when I was in school, you know, you can't, how are you going to make your own watch? You know, you can make one a year, you know, like Roger Smith was doing. And how we, that's how what we all thought. So it was either we do after sales service or we go work for a company who's assembling new watches and that kind of thing. It was just it was an impossible impossibility unless you outsource certain parts or main plates from somebody else. Mm-hmm. To get where we are now in independent watchmaking, if I would have told you we could do this 25 years ago, we'd be laughing, walking out of the Wolstep school, you know, going sitting by the river in Neuchatel, go, it's not, what do you need, like $20 million, bro? It ain't going to happen, you know? Mm-hmm. But look where we are now. Now we, as independents, we're the leaders of the industry, okay? The big giant companies are looking at us to go, where's the breakthrough? What are they doing? How are they operating the business? How are they selling those watches? How are they selling them when they don't even have a PR team? How is this possible? How do we learn from them? And they're still not getting it because we're artists and it's true to our heart is how. We have perseverance in a different way. We're not working for a paycheck at all. We'd love to be blessed to not have that burden or worry of you know, where we're going to get, you know, our next lobster tail or king crab leg or something like that. But we're really doing it from the heart, you know, with your artists, the ones that are at the top of the independent food chain. So support your independent watchmaking.
I think that's the beauty of watchmaking. It's you should never have like only the money for a goal in any sort of business. It's just doing what you like and do it every week.
So
I think you're blessed with this.
How are you balancing and you're doing such a wonderful job on social media? So I try to present this also to all the young watchmakers and old watchmakers who you know can barely use the internet and are still on old to Facebook and whatnot. Is that very time consuming, Facebook, as far as I'm concerned?
Not really. You have to be efficient.
So, all right, fill us in, Stefan, on your outlook on the business side of things, how you launched this so fast. Obviously, art sells, okay? You created something that's visually appealing to many. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, sometimes that just clicks, you know, but you're a super intelligent dude. So explain to people, give us a little bit of insight of how you're running that side of the social media and keep it going and sit at the bench.
Yeah, it's during the day, I just continue making pictures. And let's say I have to take a toilet break and then it's on the toilet. It's updated social media. And that's efficiency.
The Dutch way. Awesome, bro.
That's the
I try to update like every day or every 2 days, like a few pictures what I'm working on. So I'm not trying to spam on social media. It's just every now and then I have like some really important updates, new movement I'm working on, new finishing type I just discovered. And I'm only sharing those things. And every now and then when the watch is finished. So only like more the important stuff.
How many watches are you producing currently? You don't have to tell. Just give us a roundabout what your goal might be and that kind of thing.
I'm manufacturing around 20 watches this year. Mm. And that's also the maximum amount I'm manufacturing. Also for next year's. So my heart is with producing a very few watches a year. And just go all in on those separate projects. So it will never be like a manufacturing factory. It will always be like a very small business. And it's only 20 pieces I'm making at the moment.
And all by yourself?
Yes.
That's true independent watchmaking. That's it. Same with me. I'd like to help a few other watchmakers along the way. As I always do, I like to give back like this show, and you know, which is very informative, we hope, for people that are watching for years to come. But same kind of analogy for me. I'm a one-man show from design to CAD to CAM. It's mm-hmm. a long day. My nature is to work extremely slow. Like, I am beyond slow. I am not the guy who's going to make money fixing Rolexes. Like, it ain't going to happen, bro. No. I'm not doing 10 Rolexes a day for my paycheck. Some people, they are totally cut out for that. They love it. They love it. Repetition and you know, doing that. Me, I'm just super slow to get something perfect. And if I can make, you know, five timepieces a year of what I do, I'm good to go. And I roll along in what I do, creating my art. That's my art, and that's how I work. Because what you get from me is me, 100%. Everyone's a little bit different and independent. That's why we'd like to get them on the show and discuss, you know, where they're at. Because you're very young, hopefully. I'm here for another 30, 40 years, maybe 60, 70 years, and I could be the oldest human walking our planet. And we can come back and check in on you then. See how many you're making. I'm on number six, dude. But I'm done. I'm done, dude.
It screws me that size.
Like in your case, you are making your movement. You are making all those separate parts. Yeah, that just takes time.
Yeah.
And you can't rush making these parts.
No, it's actually the enjoyable part. Right now, you know, it's still like this is just 3 weeks of machining here. These are the balance bridge.
Yeah, I saw it on your Instagram. Yeah, nice.
Now this one hasn't been seen yet. This is the actual balance.
No. I've seen a different part on the Instagram. Yeah.
You saw the those are train bridges. This is what I'm working on now. This is a one piece, three dimensional balance bridge, which is, as far as I know, has never been done either. Made out of solid steel. So this just came off the machine yesterday. Version one. Yeah. So it's completely three dimensional. So there's no separate legs. There's no separate lifting points or anything. It's one complete solid balance bridge. It's a lot of design work. But now the design work then goes to the machine work to get it to where it sits in the watch perfect. So it's very time consuming what we do. And I try to convey that to people. It's not just draw it on the computer and then either go make it on a shop lid or make it on a jig bora, and then you know, 4 or 5 days later, I got my piece. Okay, let me just put it in the watch. It's like not how this works. It's like
no. It's just countless hours. When I look at my newest piece, this Terra Luna model with in-house movement, until now I've spent more than 1,700 hours. Wait. Let me
go for it there. Yeah. So that's a Terra Luna. That's something else, isn't it, Dan?
No. That one, this one took me less time because it was built on ETA base. But I'm not sure.
Let's see. Hang one moment here. One moment. Let's see if we can do this for you.
Yeah, man. So tell us what we're looking at, Stefan. That's your in-house?
Yes. Yeah, it's difficult. Is it showing up right?
Yeah. It's actually pretty good for the platform.
Yeah.
And that's the new in-house movement?
Wow, that's better there. That's better there. Show that again, Stefan. Do that again. That was me messing about the settings there.
Perfect, right there.
Wow.
That's badass, bro.
Yeah, but until now, it took me 1,700 hours. You know, coming up with the idea, testing different parts, trying to tackle every problem with this model in 3D. And at the moment I'm building it.
Are you working in SolidWorks? What 3D program?
No, I'm using Fusion 360.
Okay, killer. Yeah, a lot of people are using that now.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's it's a cut. It's calm. You can make perfect drawings in this. It's really user friendly.
Yeah, when I started to learn a few years ago. I went to online school for it. It was between Fusion 360 and SolidWorks. I just ended up with SolidWorks because SolidWorks is tied to CamWorks, which is what I'm using for Cam.
So
it's all in the same. Once you're done with a CAD model, I'm in the same program and I'm already working on Cam.
Yeah, but that's the same with Fusion 360. It's CAD, it's Cam. You can make renders. You can do strength tests. You can do everything in Fusion 360.
Yeah, no, it's a monster.
It's really nice.
Yeah, yeah. And it's very reasonably priced at the moment, let's say.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, but just, it takes so much hours. But yeah, it's a hobby. It's a passion. So
tell us a little about the new in-house movement. Are you how you came about? What is it? Is it based on another caliber, or fill us in?
This model started in 2018. So in 2018, I built the very first prototype of this one. The prototype was actually built on an ETA movement. Wait, I will grab it. Mm-hmm. So this was the prototype I made in 2018. Mm. So that was the first watch ever made with a 3D Earth, 3D Moon, balance wheel on the front, and a subdial. And from then, I started designing my own movement, my in-house movement. This movement, the ETA movement, it's 37 millimeters in diameter. And this movement I'm working on at the moment, it's 33 millimeters in diameter. So that's the first difficult part, to like get like all the components in a very small space. Mm-hmm. And this movement of 33 millimeters will have, of course, you know, the gear train and balance wheel and everything. And it has a 3D Earth complication. It has a 3D Moon complication with quick set. It has a balance wheel on the front. It has a subdial. And the most difficult part was to fit everything of this inside a watch case that will be 39 millimeters in diameter and 10 millimeters high.
Wow. Right.
The 3D Earth and 3D Moon will be 6 millimeters in diameter. So it was like a very tight space. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the most difficult part. It was like an enormous puzzle to solve.
Yeah, it's a very big puzzle, especially in CAD.
Yeah. What
gears are you manufacturing for your new movement there?
For the gear train, I used parts of the ETA movement. Some parts are made by me, some parts are modified by me, and some parts I used directly from this movement. And the gears for driving the Earth complication, driving the Moon complication, and winding the spring barrel are made by me.
So you're making the gears and you're heat treating them and everything.
Yes.
I don't know how you learned all this crap, dude. Without not
internet, internet knows everything.
That's, you know what I'm saying, Johnny. Right? That's why you're shaking your head. That's why Johnny's been shaking his head for like the last 5 minutes.
That's what I do for a living, man. I shake my head because I can't. But
it's
so.
I just
found an image of the movement online, so I'm gonna try and get that up in a moment or two there. So mm-hmm. I do all this graphic design stuff when you guys are talking, like, you know. So
It's the part of what I find so fascinating is not many people we can interview, Johnny, that didn't, you know, they're not traditionally trained, that got this far this young. You know, I still, it's still baffling my brain as a watchmaker, because it's okay if someone has figured out how to, you know, move some gears around and put some jewels in and make a module and place it on top of Anita. I mean, they kind of just figured that out. But Stefan has taken this into watchmaking land, like where you're a real watchmaker. Without sitting next to a watchmaker for years and at least apprenticing and not going to school. But maybe in the old days, that's how you learned, you know, a lot of times apprenticing. He did none of the above. He has a couple of friends that are watchmakers. When he gets stuck, probably he could probably go visit his watchmaker, but I'm sure he's past that by now. It just shows you, you know, you can do it. There's also, how did you learn how to do the plating? Same thing you learned online, correct? How did the rhodium plating and all that?
Yeah, it's just trying. The plating took me months before I finally had it right. But at the moment, I can do rhodium plating, nickel plating, and gold plating and copper plating. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just one of those things you have to learn yourself.
Yeah, and it's very good to learn for yourself, because I know a lot of people that have. Their independence, and they say, I'm overloaded. You know, I don't know crap about, you know, rhodium plating. Let me just send it out to this guy. He's a specialist. He can do it. You know, he rhodium plates bicycle parts. and I'm sure he can do this. And they spend 6 months making some parts for their timepiece, and they actually sent them their real parts, and they came back like crap. So that's more and more what happens in independence is we try in the beginning maybe to farm out little things here or there. And if we're not in Switzerland, as I was explaining to you, in Switzerland, everyone's a freaking master. You know, it's going to come back correct. Yeah. Steph is not in Switzerland. I'm not in Switzerland. And Johnny's in Ireland. So imagine, any one of us trying to get any of this done. And it comes back and it's like crap. And then you lose faith sometimes, not in just what you're doing, but you lose faith in what other people in your country's standard is for excellence. Because watchmaking is not a 0% room for error. It's above a 0% room for error. It's like beyond the beyond the beyond the beyond, you know? So, it's not just for us as watchmakers. That's how we're trained. But it's nowadays, when you buy a watch, you get to see through the back. You know, in the old days, Rolexes, you still don't see through the back. Only we get to see that. You know, same with Patek Philippe's and the old ones. The case is closed. You didn't get to see that. Now everyone gets to see it. They put on a magnifying glass and they're like, it's not rhodium plated correctly. Oh, look at these Geneva stripes. That's not done the old way. So everyone's got an opinion, even though they're not a watchmaker. So what happens is that gets back to us, and the person, the watchmaker, gets pissed off. The guy rhodium plated it incorrectly, and he goes out and just tries to figure it out on their own. Everything has to stop when we do that. That means we're not working anywhere else. I'm not working on my balance bridge. I'm not working on this. I'm not working on that to get and learn that. Then the next thing is, okay, let me send out. I just need a little numbers printed on my dial for the sub second hand, if we have a sub second hand. I don't have a pad printing machine. I don't know how that crap works, right? I'm not really interested in that. And we send it to a dial factory. It comes back. It's not to our standards. And once again, we have to learn another job. And if you're wondering why, when you pick up the George Daniels book, he ended up having to know 53 jobs, there it is. I just presented it for you. Because nobody can do it as good as we want to do it, especially when we have extreme OCD, like most amazing independents does. And obviously, Stefan has extreme OCD. And I pointed this out every time. You know, you can't wake up and be the lone guy in your shop. Just you wake up and, you look at all these tools and machines all around me and all around him and just get to work. Like, you got to be out of your mind to do that and then produce something like Stefan has done or other independents do. That's what makes us all nuts and crazy. But that's what we are. We're creating micromechanical art now. And it's so wonderful that we're in that time where we're not making art for time. We're making art for art. It just time is in there and is presented in whatever way we would like to present it. You have your unique way of presenting your time. But it really is what we wear on the wrist, the collectors now. It's
a piece of art you can wear on your wrist and just can take it everywhere. Mm-hmm. That's the same as how I see it.
Yeah. That's the point of that whole stupid long rant that I was just on. it was like, what I'm always trying to present here for independence now is because some people just go, dude, how do you see the time on those things? Yeah. Well, you know what, dude? It's on your phone. It's really not about that. We've really surpassed that now because the ideas that are out there for micromechanics, it's just insane. It's beyond our boundaries, and the walls have been taken down in the last 15 years. We don't have to just turn the watch over to have the craziness inside there and all the complications. Now we can't place it on the front. It really is secondary that you know the time. It's a statement that the collector is wearing. Does it fit your personality for that time period in your life that you're in right now? Because we all change. And that's why collectors change their timepieces or change their cars or change their women. Whatever it might be, they go through a few years of this, a few years of that, and we evolve, we change as humans. That's not what representative. That's why, you have this shirt for these 2-3 years, and maybe you have a different kind of shirt or your glasses or whatever it may be. And that's the wonderful thing about human nature and art. And it's a wonderful thing is we have people like Stefan and other independents that can represent independent watchmaking. That's why, Stefan, I know you're young, but don't take those comments of when you look on a forum and you release a new model of your timepiece and somewhere else, what a piece of crap, man. Why doesn't it just tell the time? You know, just, you know, don't, Stefan, don't pay attention to it because.
Yeah, you can't please everybody, you know.
You know, it's not, it's not that. Yeah. You're going to produce, if you're going to be happy making 0.8% of the 100% of people that even know you're alive happy, that's good. Just roll on. Everyone's got a comment. Let them. There's plenty of other artists for them to go like somewhere else. It just doesn't fit them. Some people are hateful. That's not who I'm talking about. I'm just saying in that period of their life, they might look at something I make and it just makes them throw up. 3 years later, they may come back around and go, man, I really didn't. Because you'll see them on the forums too. Later on, they come back around and go, you know, the first time I looked at that, it really didn't look like I liked it. The same thing when they see a new car, right? And a new shape of a new car, a new Corvette, right? Everyone, mid-engine Corvette, piece of crap. Yeah, it's not a front-engine Corvette. Blah, blah, blah. And two years from now, that Corvette dude probably be driving the same thing he'd be driving one. So
yeah.
Just roll on.
We are just following our own vision of how watchmaking should be. And yeah, if we can find customers that also are seeing the same vision, then that's good enough for me.
Yeah.
It's just a very small part of all the collectors that are interested in a 3D Earth that's rotating inside a watch. Yeah, it's we will put like an Earth inside a watch. But it's, I'm just lucky that there are a few other enthusiastic.
Yes,
that also have the same view. And there are always people that will say, "Okay, the time it's difficult to read, but yeah."
It's three-dimensional.
That's not one of my customers.
It's three-dimensional art. Putting three-dimensional micromechanical art on your wrist.
It's
insane. It's beyond insane. And you're doing it without a CNC machine, John. So that's just so everyone knows, it's quite a difficult task.
It's hand engraved, the complete Earth. Yeah. So this the ball itself, it's made by me by hand. Yeah, I think if you go to the 3D Terra in Motion, not this one, but like a very old version. No, different one. Yeah, here you can see nice, this one.
Okay.
So I manufacture this 3D, I manufacture this round metal ball. What I do then is paint this complete ball black. Then I will draw all the continents on top of it. And then everything is hand engraved. So not a single globe is the same. And so I engrave all the water away. In this way, the continents will be higher than the water. Then I will start painting the water. I will use five different colors of blue in order to create like extra depth. So the closer you will go to the continent, the lighter the water is, the further away you go from the continent, the more dark blue it will be. And yeah, then I will finish the globe with epoxy in order to give this water even extra depth.
Hmm. Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful, man. Yeah.
And like this, it's not for everybody. But lucky there are like few people around that also can appreciate the visual effect of it and also, the time I'm putting in this.
There's another watchmaker who uses the expression "not for everybody," and your work reminds me of his, and that would be Stepan Sarpaneva. I know they're very different.
Yeah, nice.
They're very different in their design and in their style, but they're both you and he. They're highly individual, and and as you say, they're not for everyone. But there's something about it that they stand out. And there's that look of, I have described in the intro, I did a couple of pieces earlier on for social media and for YouTube and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a combination of traditional values with a thoroughly contemporary twist to them. Because there are definitely suggestions of old English pocket watches and things like that there with the dial and the three-dimensional dial, the furniture, if you like, on the dial, on the plate, you know.
Yeah, it's a lot of depth I'm trying to create.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you nailed it, Johnny. Actually, exactly what you said is my perception as well. Yeah, very. Yeah. It's the second, it's the first, like, the first, the like first a, second you see it, The first second you see it, you think traditional, and then at the same time, you're seeing the globe and the modernism.
It's not traditional at all. Yeah. Like it's futuristic. Yeah, everybody would have their own perception of it, of these things. It's retro-futuristic. It's like it's old, but it's very funky and cool and new. And, man, like, I love that. Like, in the same way as I love what Stepan Sarpaneva does, I think that is that and the Terra 3D that we looked at a moment ago there. They're just absolutely spectacular pieces, you know. And so...
Thanks for your compliment. It's very nice to hear.
Absolutely. Well, I think you kind of know that. You know, what we try to do is let the people watching know that the struggle that we have as independents, but we also like to present to them that it's our art. You know, it's just like when I started my music stuff, and it's I didn't care what other people thought. It's that's what was inside of me. And if they my music sounds like crap and this and that, then you know what? There's plenty of other music. But, you know, these select little amount of people that happen to love my music, that's my family, you know, and their family starts to grow. That's all what art is about.
You have to go your own way in order to be unique, to be yourself. And you shouldn't walk in someone else's footsteps. It's just, it should be your way. And especially in the watchmaking world, you should be unique. There are already like so many brands that just look like each other. Mm-hmm. And in order to stand out, you have to do some crazy things, like building your own movement, what you're doing.
Yeah, that's pure insanity.
It's insane.
Yeah. I got three and a half years here, research and development, and 4 years of escapement development. So it takes a long time to do what I'm doing, but that's here and there. It's presenting who we are and leaving a legacy of who we are. And if you have a good grasp on what you are, then there's going to be other people that enjoy what you produce. You nailed it. You know, the way your watch looks, you have a great understanding of human nature and of other people. We don't make things to please other people. We make things to please ourselves. It just so happens it makes people love what we do and love what we are doing. They want a greater insight into what we're doing, and thank goodness for social media and the way you present your Instagram stuff, and people get that the backstory. You know, they see your machines, the other side to you. I think it's incredible that you made the gear making machine. I've seen it before. I don't want to say anything. That's actually what collectors, they want to see that, because that's what makes up you, and you is what makes up what your art is. So we all need to present that. And I'm only saying that for the younger watchmakers that are out there, that don't be scared. I'm making a wheel. No, let us see the machines you're using to make the wheel. If it's a struggle and you only have two lathes, show us, because that proves that you're out of your freaking mind, that you're doing it. And that's the cool part. That's perseverance.
That is what the collectors wanted to see. The collectors are just, they don't buy a watch. They buy, how do you say it in English? They will buy a journey. So it's they will buy the complete story. So when they look at your watch, they are looking just at you working, filing on those gears, milling those gears and everything. So I think it's very important that every customer and future customer knows what you are doing. And yeah, it's the same with your Instagram. You're also like posting pictures of parts you're milling. And that is what makes those new customers enthusiastic.
Without a doubt. Yeah.
You can't compare me to anybody else, because there's no one on planet Earth that's like me, because if you get one of my timepieces, you're actually wearing a piece of memorabilia.
Yeah.
You can't top me again. Well, you know what I need? I need Stefan to make me a Mars globe, you know, with my song that's playing on planet Mars with NASA, you know, like NASA on one side. And I can put that in my watch with a piece of like a Mars rock or something.
I think you should do that, man.
Give me 3 days.
Hey, do you know what we have? Stefan. Again, look, I am sorry, folks. Anybody who expects In the Metal to end at 59 minutes and 59 seconds, we send our sincere apologies. We are hitting 1 hour 20 at the minute, and we still have a question that we didn't ask. What about your music? Do you listen to it? What kind of music do you listen to when you're working, or do you listen to anything, or is it just the sound of the...
No. I'm always playing music. But yeah, I'd say I don't really have a music taste. So I can listen to deep house, I can listen to minimalistic techno, Bob Marley, 90s music. It's just whatever my mood is. So when I'm alone in my workshop, I'm always playing music.
Mm-hmm. But once again, right? Everybody's listening if they're still here. They would always think that, you know, we're in complete silence all the time, like watchmaking school. But we're not. You know, even at watchmaking school, we got headphones in and we're blasting whatever. It just goes to show.
No, I've got like a complete speaker surround sound system, so there's
always good music. Yeah. Music calms the savage beast.
That's brilliant. Awesome. Because it's nothing like when you're working in your own environment there, and you can you have the place to yourself, and you can crank it up, and it's
people. Saw some tour to Africa, and then.
But it's always good to know what's going on in the Italia when you're working there. You know what kind of. What the ambience is around you, like, you know, and I don't listen to my music as well. I don't listen to any talk radio, or I don't watch television or anything out there. It's music pretty much all the time, like, you know. So ABBA, I love ABBA. And no, I don't, man. I don't. I've been listening to Tool all day and Anthrax all day yesterday.
That's why you have brain damage.
That's why you have it left, and I can feel it rattling, like, you know. But I think we've covered quite a lot of stuff here tonight. There was one question, or there was a couple of questions. We did ask one about the 3D printing. Lulu in Indonesia again had asked the question about copycat competitors. Have you experienced this yet at all, Stefan? Or
I think it's an unwritten rule in the watchmaking world that you are not copying each other's work. So that's what you mean with the question, right?
I don't know. I'm wondering, is it the question more towards counterfeit, or people who are trying to rip off your innovation, your design, your feel? Like, I have seen
I can't say that people are taking my designs. But as I told you, it's more like an unwritten rule in the watchmaking world that you should be unique with your design, especially in the independent watchmaking world. It's everyone should go their own way, and when they are copying each other's work, then it will be their end of their watchmaking career. So
I don't worry about it at all, because in independent, it's they really are, like Stefan said, they're buying our journey. They're buying a piece of us. They get to talk to the true watchmaker that's making their piece. So if somebody copies something, first of all, you know, patents just don't work anymore, basically. You know,
most patents are old.
There is no patents in watchmaking, no matter what anybody tells you, they're there. Everything has been invented, so it's just you're building upon something that's older, and the patent's worn out anyway. But if someone's taking your idea, they say whatever it may be, then they know they're outed pretty fast anyway. They're probably not a real true watchmaker. Whatever they're presenting is just secondhand cheese. If you want to get the real cheese, the cheese factory, they'll find us. If we were producing 1,000 watches a year or 2,000 watches a year, and it's just strictly about money and buying a bigger house, then those are the people that worry about things like that. When you're an artist and you produce 25 pieces, the most 10 pieces, whatever it may be, I don't think we really, you know, if you're not buying it for me, you're buying crap.
The money I earn with watchmaking, all the money stays in the company. It's buying new equipment. It's trying to improve stuff, and I'm driving a full focus from 2004, and it's good enough for me.
Yeah, but you don't need to go anywhere. You're in your shop, bro. All you need is more machines and more tools. You don't need a car.
Yeah, and then we are happy. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't need to go anywhere, bro. Just get have somebody else get you food.
But so you rode on your bike tonight. You took your bicycle from the from your home back to the workshop tonight. So yeah, I agree. I think things you got are the older I get, the less important things you got are to me. Like, the age of the car or things you got there.
Yeah.
It's more the important things are the little things, and like the watches, and. There again, there's watches. Or like you could argue that there's no, we don't need watches at all, particularly now, because we have everything we need on our phone, our time, date, calendar, everything we got there. But still, people are making watches because people are buying watches. And that is it's a timeless thing that has people have a fascination with. And I love it. But so I think what we have, as I said, we've come to over 1 hour 20, 1:25. So, Stefan, I've really enjoyed listening to your improv tonight.
Super.
Yeah, and look at
thanks for having me. It's a really big honor.
Thanks for taking the time. It was actually expected but unexpected, because Stefan is, I mean, he's super intellectual being, which is I was expecting him to be very smart and very using his ingenuity to somehow get where he is. And that was like, how did he get here was my question. And now we know, you know, he also was building stuff his whole life. You know, he was in him to just build and get it done, and somehow, and with his engineering background, that obviously plays a massive, huge part. And we look at someone like Stefan, and we do look like someone like Hajime Osaka, who has an architectural background. There's always some underlying factor where, you know, they're working with intersecting lines and mathematics or something, you know, some kind of calculations that can get someone who didn't go to a traditional school to the place where they are. And that's the fascinating part of the journey. It should show anyone that you can persevere and do anything you really set your mind to. I don't let anyone tell you can't do it. And if they do,
you have to follow your passion.
Shut that person up by doing it. Because then that person will be down here looking up at you going, how the hell did he do that?
How did he do that?
Hard work. That's how.
And that watch that he criticized 3 years ago, you can't buy it now because it's tripled in price on the second hand market. And
you definitely need to raise your prices, Stefan. January 1st, jack them prices up, bro.
You're gonna be a agent man or something.
So my new price range after the show, it's in between the 30k and 100k. So it's if you're interested.
Gotta support these cottage industries, you know.
And I'll DM you. We'll talk about CNC, and if I can be of any help, absolutely.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, there's Shane. He wants to get his shout in there as well. Man, you better. Are you taking a photo?
Shane says he wants to buy one of your watches really fast before they go up. And I'm trying to explain to people, Stefan's not going to be making he's got a new in-house movement, right? So listen, people, he's not going to be making any of that other stuff soon. And that in-house movement is now like a lot of money. So you better get in now. You better just place your orders for everything else he's making.
That's it. But
I'm looking at my current order book. It's for this year. I don't take new orders. Next year, my order book is nearly full.
Excellent.
And then I'm planning for 2022. Wonderful. So it's insane.
That's wonderful. You're
fantastic.
Amazing. Fantastic, man.
Yeah. I'm just going to put this in here because, Joe, a lot of obviously with the coronavirus and the lockdown, all of the high streets have been shut down. All of the big jewelers, all the massive authorized dealers with the great, the Grand Maisons, your Patek's, Audemars Piguet, your Rolex, etc., etc. They've all been closed down. Sales are down on the floor. But the independent watch sector has been strong throughout this, and people are becoming more aware. Yeah. And we think it is absolutely fantastic to see you guys coming along. And Stefan, you're only 27. Man, I'll be pushing up daisies by the time you retire. You know, I can't wait to see all the stuff that you'll be coming out with over the coming years with your new in-house movement. And, you know, it's a credit to you. And I'm delighted. And there's our good friend Pietro. He
thanks, Pietro.
Great support.
Shout out to Pietro.
Pietro is the man. He is the man. So he has he's been a great supporter of the independents as well, and he offers a great platform as well, just as for all of the independent brands to champion them, even if they're sold out or not available, just to be able to promote and to let people know that that the independent watches
that I exist
are right there. So thanks for joining us, everybody. Thank you for joining us tonight. Thank you for
thank you
all around the world. From I know that you're watching us in Indonesia, in Asia, in the United States, and across Europe, UK, Ireland, hopefully. And it's been fantastic to introduce the work of another absolute star of the independent sector. And Stefan, we hope.
Yeah.
Part of the gig about In the Metal is that we hope that some of our guests will be happy to make a return visit sometime when they've got something new to show us, and we can go through all the nitty gritty and learn what you've been doing and what you've been getting up to. So the invitation is open if you ever like to come back again, and if we haven't scared you, or I know Dan might scare you, but you're.
Yeah, when the watch is finished, we can we could talk again. Then I can show you how the watch turned out.
Yep, and also once the pandemic has been solved and we get to move on, thankfully, and I start to travel a little bit, I would love to come to your atelier and we can talk about your machines and that kind of cool stuff. And
that's the way.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Absolutely.
I have a great coffee corner in my atelier, so the coffee is always ready.
Excellent. Brilliant. That's everyone, great, Stephen.
Yeah, thank you, everyone, for watching us again tonight for another episode of In the Metal. We are back again next week. We will have another amazing personality from the watch industry, someone who does restorations of old historic timepieces and breathes new life into them, and a real star from England. And we're looking forward to welcoming her next week as well. Yep, her. So, folks, thank you so much again for joining us, and we will catch you same time, same place next week, and all the best from Ireland.
Peace out, everybody. Thanks for joining in. Thank you very much again, Stefan.
You're welcome.
Keep pounding away, my friend. Representing your country is just a wonderful thing, man. You're doing a great job.
I will.
And representing independent watchmaking, man. We thank you. Thank you. Thank you from all of us from the bottom of our hearts for being on our show. And
yes,
being a wonderful representation of the younger generation of people really breaking through and making incredible micromechanical art.
They can make a film about our endings and call it The Long Goodbye, because, you know.
But wait, one more question. For 1999.
The ending is like half an hour.
You get two for 1999, not one.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Okay, Stefan, hold fire there. Don't go away. And so thank you, everyone. We'll see you next time on In the Metal.